Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Abington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. It's been a while, and I'm going to tell you the remorse of this being the second to last War Report after 4 years of doing this. Has begun to take over. The 2 weeks that we were not on the air, it was so unsettling that what it would be like not being on the air anymore. That 2 week period there was like a premonition of what was to come. And I want to tell you, it was very unsettling for me. I've been doing this for 4 years. So we have well over 200 plus hours of shows in the archives. The preparation that goes into each show, the hours and days of research and refining and et cetera, it has become so much a part of who I am and what I want to do with my life that approaching the fact that it won't be that way anymore and now a week's time has been very, very unsettling time for me. And I think I'm speaking for both Joe and Deb, and I'm hoping that you guys are back. When I say you guys, the people who have been around in and out or continuous for the 4 years that we've been on air, and boy, I'm rambling to some extent, but let me get to where we want to be today and hope that I can do justice to a very large issue, topic, and try and get it done today. If not, I'll go into part of the last week's show. If you got our promotion, we're going to do the show that we were going to do 2 weeks ago, and the events that took place in Florida, we decided not to go on the air, sort of like flying our flag at half-staff by not going on the air. We have been talking about, I was supposed to talk about a new model, a model of the urban positive youth development public high school. In reality, I've been talking about this model somewhat covertly ever since September. Remember back in September, we started September back to school month, and we did all four shows in September pertaining to coming back to school. November, I'm going to switch over to November. November, we talked about saving public education, that public education today, back then in November, for all extensive purposes, we're on the ropes. And the Machiavellian agenda people are kicking our butts. And I have proposed that there were some things that we, being the edge community, tried and were doing to try and save public school. And the most, I guess, extensive effort has been with the community schools. And I talked about the various kinds of community schools and the history of community schools, and asked the question whether or not community schools could be the weapon, the vehicle that would help stave off the total destruction of public education. And I asked you as a challenge what you thought of the community school movement and whether or not it was something that could help save public education. And I also gave you a challenge of a choice of what kind of school would you prefer as a teacher, as a parent, as a citizen. The Machiavellian school, or the as a form of choice, and the or the like would be the progressive kind of school models. And also during November, I talked about the 21st century teacher and what I thought the 21st century teacher needed to be. All of those shows basically was dropping breadcrumbs to lead you to this point. When I say this point in talking about a new model for public education. At that particular time, I was not sure whether or not I was going to say we were no longer going to do the war report come the end of February. But what I was sure of was that we need a new model for public education, not a reform model, but a transformative model for public education. And so I was like leading us up to this point. It just so happens that that month that we were off in December, made the decision, we talked about it, and made the decision that War Report would cease at the end of its fourth year. Now we've pushed it back, of course, into March. But it turned out that leading us to this point of talking about a new model, a transformative model, not a reform, a reformist model, but a model that seeks to transform public education from pre-K to PhD. And what that model may look like. And so that model, it has implications, and I'm going to get to it, of course. I keep saying that model. I'm going to get to it. But it has very broad, sweeping implications for public education, from school boards to site administrators, to teachers, students, parents, communities, across the board. And so I've been dropping these little breadcrumbs over the last 4 months, trying to get to the point where I will tell you what I see as the basics of a new model. But I was also saying to you, what if you were tasked with coming up with a new model, what would your model look like? To start with, you have to start with a vision slash purpose. Remember, vision really equals the purpose. And if you've been around for the 4 years, you know the very first show back in February 2014, I started off talking about the purpose of education and what it has been, both in terms of formal definition and informal definition of the purpose of education. I went through the history of it from back to the founding, quote, fathers of the American country, and even beyond that to European philosophers about education, et cetera. And I've worked that over the last 4 years in terms of trying to get you to really come to an understanding of what has been the purpose of education and how that purpose has defined the mission of education, the goals, the strategies, the what takes place within our schools. Everything centers around this notion of purpose, or actually the vision of the school. So in starting with that, my model, it's mine in the sense that I'm taking ownership of this thing. It is incomplete. It's something that in one form or another I had been working on for a long, long time. And earlier today, I was thinking about how long I've been working on this thing. And I'll get into that in a moment. But for our purpose, to give you a frame of reference, think about, we have what we call, you know, our comprehensive high schools. Think about a comprehensive medical hospital. If you've ever been to a hospital, and if you ever took a moment and looked at all the people that were running around in that hospital, everyone in a medical hospital, theoretically, from the administrator, chief administrator, all the way down to the maintenance crew and everything in between, the doctors, the nurses, nurses' assistants, the dietitians, the therapists, to you name it. In theory, they are all supposedly on the same page, in the same book, and that book, that page, is that they are there individually and collectively to try and provide services using their knowledge, their skills, their training for the promotion of human wellness and well-being. Everyone there is dedicated supposedly to their patients' well-being and overall wellness. Now, of course, you have individuals who are not as committed to that as others, but in theory, that's what they are all there to do. Now, take that to our public schools. We don't have, and this is my view, we don't have that the uniformity of purpose. We don't have that uniformity of commitment to a single overriding purpose in our public education. If you go back, especially the teachers, when you were in school and you were being trained to become a teacher, if you took a history course, history of education, you'll know that back in Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson days, the purpose of getting an education was to be able to have informed citizens who could make informed judgment about the people whom they would vote for to be in control of this new democracy, and that this new democracy wouldn't survive if we didn't have educated people. Fast forward to, and that lasted for, still present today as a purpose. But then you get into Horace Mann's time when there were European immigrants coming in, kids running around unsupervised, kids that didn't know the language, the culture, and on, and the notion of, or the purpose of public education then was to, one, get these kids off of the street where they were possibly becoming delinquents and the negative aspects of youth development, and put them in a system that would, one, keep them off the street, two, would introduce a process of Americanization, a socialization process whereby Europeans, mostly Europeans then, coming into the country, would undergo a unique, common set of training that would Americanize them. They would speak the language. They would know the history of the country. They would share its culture. They would become standardized American issue. And they would hopefully, not hopefully, they were totally expected to be able to fit in and maintain the status quo of the time, and also perpetuate that status quo into the future. We then have periods where different philosophers, the John Dewey era, and other philosophers came in with ideas challenging the notion of what public education should be about, its purpose, but also its methodology or pedagogy, its curriculum, content. And we have then our, and oh, during all of this from day one, you had the elite, the equivalent of the 1%, the 2%, the business community, all seeking to have a seat at the table, have influence over what schools should be for, or the purpose of schools, to prepare young people to be able to come out and immediately come to work for various industries, and being able to take instructions, follow the rules of that industry, that's what many people wanted schools to be about. That's bad English to be about, but you get my point. So we can go on and on in terms of this fight over the purpose of education. If we come up to the current day in terms of, quote, and I've said this before, in terms of previous, quote, reforms were all about trying to, quote, make the schools better, moving from within and making changes, whereas the current, quote, reform movement is coming from outside of the school and with a purpose of saying that the school structure needs to be radically changed, and to achieve that even to the point of being destroyed, so a new structure, a new purpose can be erected from the ashes. And all of these reform movements and efforts, I have not seen, and again, this is personalized, I have not seen anyone really talking about the school purpose should be to contribute to the youth development, children, youth, young adult, the positive development, by that their well-being and their wellness. And so if you got our promotion and the title of today's show, where I was going to talk about that the new urban positive youth development public high school that will serve a larger purpose. Everything I just said is what I meant by this larger purpose, that the school, and when I say high school, I'm also talking about middle school, I'm also talking about elementary schools, that this model is applicable to all the grades. And that this model says that we should be so far beyond where we are today in terms of the purpose of school is to prepare students, young people, to become consumers when they come out, to become robots almost in terms of their focus on maintaining and perpetuating the present day status quo, the economic, the political, the social, cultural, historical status quo, and that we go through day after day after day where teachers spend their time in test prep, where teachers are forced to teach from a very narrow-based curriculum, where our humanity courses, our social studies courses have been stripped from the curriculum, where the pedagogy is now scripted, where teachers are treated as semi-professional at best and have no voice or very little voice in what should be taught and how it should be taught. And that said model is, in my view, and in the view of this show for the last 4 years, this privatized model. And when I told you the privatization model, the choice model, I said, when I say privatization, you should think ownership and control, where the school participates in training students to come out and be owned and controlled by a, I'll call it, a social system, social, cultural, historical system that reduce them to being interested only in their own private survival and thriving, with no convictions whatsoever towards the public good that our schools are supposed to be a public good institution and contribute to the public good. Again, I'm assuming that you know what I'm talking about, because we've been talking about it in various forms for 4 years. You've been living it for your entire life. And so I'm giving big picture kind of descriptions here, so that in this new urban, I've specifically used the term new urban. Our public school system is largely in the urban centers. You know this. That public school system today has gone from being 30, 50, 100 years ago, virtually all white student body, all white teacher administration, all white district, state, federal government didn't have a big role 100 years ago in education, to now where you have in our urban centers, schools population has shifted to where you have a minority majority school population, and in some schools that minority majority reaches 90, 95, 100%. And so that the model that I'm going to talk about is predicated upon that reality. We're talking urban school systems today and their population. Okay, so here we have today, 2018, and going forward, largely urban school system that is majority minority, and we have a concerted, intentional effort by some to change the school system to be what I just talked about in terms of its purpose is to turn out individuals who have a narrow knowledge base, skill base to fit into the current society and how that society will look and be 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the line. It's against that model that I've been working on, quote, I'll call it my model for now. And I mentioned earlier that this model has been in the making for a very long time. Most recently, I started working on it May of last year and been working on it since. But in reality, the model goes back to, and I know what you're going to say, back to 1977, when I left teaching, when I walked away from UCLA, my intent was to start my own, and I mentioned this, I think, a couple weeks ago, my own university and start with university and then come down to high school, middle school, and et cetera. And that school was going to be, that university and its tributaries were going to be for what today we call the at-risk population. Back then, this was before the at-risk term came into being during Reagan administration in the 80s. I was looking at a school basically for my father. And I mentioned that my father never went to school that day in his life. He couldn't read, he couldn't write. But he was a bright man. And I could only imagine what he could have achieved had he had a top-notch education, K through 12, had he gone to college. And so I wanted to create a school system, basically, whereby people like my father could come in and be, my model then was, we will greet you and meet you where you are and then help you get to where you need to be and beyond. And so that was my start. And that was based upon my experience. Now, I've been teaching for a while. I did some teaching in the public school system, attended the public school system, the university, the whole nine yards. And so I was putting together this model, more or less. Didn't get it done. And when I started back in May, June, that model resurfaced in my head. And so the model that I'm going to go to now basically is a reincarnation of earlier model. Okay, now the model that I'm going to try and describe, and said, and I'm not going to be able to do justice to it. It starts with the purpose, and again, the vision. And the vision for me is that school should be dedicated to the positive development of all of the nation's children, youth, young adults. And by positive development, I'm referring to what I said previously, the well-being and the wellness of the students. And that I don't emphasize in this model the preparing students through the standardized testing, through high-stakes testing, to the narrow curriculum, to prepare students to only be able to come out and become consumers and part of the labor force that this country, quote, needs to protect and perpetuate its status as a world power. That's what I see we're doing. I completely reject that. And instead, I think the schools should prepare students to become young adults and to be able to contribute to the public good of the nation, to be able to be healthy and on wellness, the whole notion of wellness, that they are happy, they are knowledgeable, they're skillful, they are capable of surviving in these wretched times and in the future, they're also capable of thriving in the face of all kinds of risk factors that they will encounter, and that the school, as a primary socialization agency, and I've gone through this where the school, with mandatory attendance, students spend, in many cases, more time in school with teachers than they do at home, in their families, with their parents, with their siblings, so that the schools have become such a important agent or agency of socialization, that it, in becoming this predominant, almost predominant responsible site for socialization of the nation's youth. I know you would say, well, wait a minute, that's the parents' role. I know that, but think about this. With the advent of World War II and with women coming into the labor force and staying after the war, and women increasingly going to college, women increasingly developing careers, with women joining, quote, the men in terms of being out of the household for 8-10 hours a day, coming in, having, 3-4 hours maybe, family time, weekends. Things have changed so that the school now has that responsibility, because the kids spend more time with the schools and teachers than they do with their parents. And so that the schools then are in a primary position to prepare our kids, and I'm using that in the largest sense, for life after school. When I mean after graduation, after completion, or going on to college, and et cetera. And that this should be the purpose of our school. And it's encompassing in that word, positive youth development. I think said school needs to have that as a vision, and their mission should be to dedicate it to doing everything they need to do to help our kids transition through the school years and out of the school into the larger society as either college students or becoming family, heads of families, workers, and et cetera. We need to prepare them in a way that we have not done previously. And going back to, and I'll be saying this over and over again, that we need to be able to prepare them, the whole student. You know this movement, whole school, whole student, whereby we recognize that when a kid comes to school, he or she brings with him things that had happened the night before, the day before, the week before, the year before. They bring all of that into the school. They don't drop that off at the school door. So that this notion of the social emotional development of our students, I think the schools should embrace that as part of their mission, as part of the well-being. That's part of the humanness of growing up. I think also the school should, as part of their mission, they need to develop a culture. And this, to me, is the most important part, a school culture. By a culture, using the word from anthropology, that a culture is what people do, the values, the norms, the beliefs, the images, all of that goes to make up the social cohesion of a group of people is their culture. I believe inside the school, we should have a culture that is intentionally built from the ground up to prepare our students to be able to survive and thrive in the outside world when they leave the school. And by that, I mean that the culture of a school is what the leadership, the principals, the teachers, what they espouse as the values of the school's culture, that this school values students becoming engaged in the curriculum, in the pedagogy of the school, in the values of the school. The teachers are engaged, the administration engaged. Engagement becomes a very big concept for me, that everyone, back to that hospital model, everyone is engaged in a shared vision, a shared mission, and that the culture of the school reflects the values, and that that culture also gives a clear message to the students that we care about you individually, collectively. We view you as being important. You matter. You know, like the Black Lives Matter, you matter to us. We believe in your potential. We believe that you can be anything that you want to be, regardless of where you are today and how you got to where you are today. Here in this school, as I said, we will meet and greet you where you are, and we will work to get you to where you need to be and beyond. That should be overwhelmingly part of the school's culture. It should be communicated by everyone involved. It should be demonstrated every day to the students that the people there are all committed to them, the students, to help them be the best that they can be. That's a cultural thing. Also, the school, teachers, admins should know and practice the importance of relationships between teacher, students, admin, the adults in that building, and that that relationship should be a positive one, wherein there is engagement on part of both the teacher and the student to benefit from the relationship, the student, in terms of the learning and the social, emotional development, the teachers in terms of learning how to be better mentors and teachers as a result of working diligently with each student and seeing each student not as negative in terms of at-risk labels or as a threat, but as a person, a young person who has all the potential in the world, and that it's their responsibility to help that student recognize that they have this unlimited potential, and that through a relationship, an academic, a friendship, a mentorship, that they will help the student develop in such a way that it will be transformative. The school culture should be on display at all times. There are other elements to the school culture, in that every student from day one, I'm saying day one in terms of when you come into the ninth grade, in most places now high school starts at ninth grade. We're starting there. I don't care where you went to for your middle school and for your elementary school. I don't care what your home environment, your community environment is. When you come into this school, that culture should be on display from moment one and be there your entire time that you're in school. The school should communicate that whatever the risk factors, this is another part of the culture, whatever the risk factors that this student has experienced in his or her lifetime, this school, its culture, will work diligently to mitigate those risk factors and not duplicate them within the school itself. That is a very important part of the school's culture, is reducing students' exposure to risk. No, you shouldn't come into a school and be exposed to the same risk factors that you're exposed to in the larger society. In this sense, the school should be a haven. And the first step here should be the development of a culture that, from the ground up, should have as its mission reducing the student exposure to risk factors inside the school. Also, there should be nothing but 100% effort in enhancing students' social support. Stop for a second, the two things that I just said. If you're following me, you can see that teachers, teacher training, teacher experience is impacted by this type of school, this type of culture within a school. Our teachers, historically, we have not been trained for this type of school. I just want to bring that up right now because I will go to it later. And we're talking about here the social support. Also, we should addressing students the social emotional needs and their development. I'm really big on this development thing here, that teachers and schools should be trained more in the developmental cycle of our children, from children to adolescents to young adults. We teach courses in child development departments about the developmental cycle. That developmental cycle has tremendous implication for the education cycle. There should be an alignment between our knowledge of the developmental cycle, which includes the physical, the emotional, the social development of each student, and our education should be aligned. We should know as teachers, as admin, this developmental cycle and how it impacts the child's experience in school. I mean, you can, there's books written on this, but you get the point that we need to know, we need to be trained if necessary to understand our children's developmental cycle, and especially as it takes place within this society. These are frameworks, more or less. We also need to be able to align, as I just said, or enhance students' academic support. In other words, in our schools, in this particular school, we should have a support system via school counselors, school psychologists, school social workers, tutorial programs, mentoring programs. We need to be able to provide our students with the type of experiences that will aid them in their academic achievement. When I said earlier about reducing the risk factors that exist outside of school and eliminate them within the school, we need to replace those risk factors with factors that enhance students' development and their academic achievement as part of our preparation for when we go out into, quote, the real world. What I'm talking about here is we need to build our schools from the ground up to be able to reduce the at-risk factors that our youth of today experience every day in our urban schools. And so that if we come to an understanding, an awareness and understanding, an emotional engagement with what I've just talked about, then that would lead to a building of a new school model that would be dedicated to the positive youth development that I've been talking about. Yeah, my time is up. I don't feel like I've done a good job here. I will try and do better in our last show, but also in that last show, I'm going to do something like Dwight Eisenhower did in his farewell address to the nation that became known as the military-industrial complex, did what Orwell did and when he wrote 1984, when he gave the warning to the world about what was possibly coming our way as a result of who won the war and et cetera. So I'm going to try and hit both of those in that last show. I'm sorry, my time is up, and I have to say goodbye. As usual, have a good rest of your Sunday. Thank you, everyone.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.